Hey, it's a local spotlight show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host today. And with me today, I have with me retired Judge Eric Pistorius. Welcome, Eric.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks to be for inviting me.
Oh, yeah. Loved having you. So you've been retired for how many years now?
Almost five. It'll be five in December.
Five in December. That went by fast.
It really has.
Yeah. And you started off, you went to Jersey High, right?
Yeah, I grew up just a couple of blocks away from the courthouse when I was a kid.
Yeah. Now, were you into sports and stuff when you were in
school? Yeah, I was a very bad athlete, but I tried at a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think on the C team and the ninth grade basketball team, so seventh, eighth, and ninth, so. I was small and short, but I was slow and uncoordinated, so that made up for it.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, when did you decide that you wanted to go into law?
When I was a kid, as I said, we lived close to the courthouse, and my mom worked for the Democrat News forever. And the courthouse is where you got a lot of the news, who got married, who got divorced, who got tickets, who got arrested, those kind of things. And she would go once a week and gather the news, and it was a couple blocks walk from me originally when we lived on West Arch, and I'd go with her for a couple reasons. First off, it's a cool building, and even as a kid, I was always in awe of the courthouse. And then going into it, Linda Crotchett was clerk back then.
Yeah.
So I would go in her office, and there was always a bowl of candy of Starlight Mints on the desk, so I could always sneak me a piece of candy. And when you got seven brothers and sisters, there's not a whole lot of candy to go around.
So. No.
And then I'd go upstairs to the courtroom because Howard Lee White.
You had seven brothers and sisters?
Yeah. Yep.
Wow. Big family.
Yeah. So I'd go upstairs to the courtroom for a couple of reasons. One is it was air conditioned. And two, Howard Lee White was there. And Howard was a character. And he was judge for 25 years. My father passed when I was very young. Howard knew my father, so he was always very good to me, and I would go watch, and I was just enthralled about the whole thing. It was like theater, and Howard just kind of was the band leader, the orchestra leader, and it was just a fascinating world for me to see, and I got to see it up close, and then, I'm 8, 10, 11 years old, and he would talk to me after he was done.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of my start.
Yes. And then, so right then you were thinking, I want to be in it. Did you want to be a judge like Howard?
I wanted both. Okay. I wanted to be an attorney because I watched them and I was always very impressed with what they did. And Butch Whitman was the state's attorney back then, and then later Lee Plummer, who I ended up working for both of those men.
Okay. Yeah. So you go to what college did you go to?
Went to Western for undergrad and then Carbondale for law school.
I see. Got out in
84.
Yeah.
And I went to work in a law firm in Granite City for about a couple of years. And then Lee asked me to come back to work for him in both his private practice and at the state attorney's office. And I came back in 86, I believe.
When you were working for Lee, What'd you actually do for Lee? What was it?
Well, he had some private practice work, and also obviously worked. He was at the state's attorney, so I worked at the state's attorney's office and was involved in the prosecution of cases. And that was a good start because you get a lot of courtroom experience when you work at the state's attorney's office. In fact, I had interned at Lee's office after my second year of law school. They had a 7-Eleven program, which allowed second-year law students to work at the state's attorney's office or public defender's office and actually go into court. So I was going into court every day the summer before my senior year in law school.
Cool.
Yeah. So it was really – and Lee was a great teacher. I got to do a jury trial. Not successful, but it was an opportunity to get in front of a jury, and that was kind of fun. And Lee handled it beautifully because I was looking for some leadership and insight. And he stayed away purposefully, so I would have to do it myself. Oh. And it worked out, so yeah.
Yeah, why do they call it 7-Eleven?
I think that's just the statute.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I got you. And you also worked at WJBM.
I went away, came back, and Gary Brown owned the station, and they were looking for somebody to do ball games. This is back, and this was a great era. This was with the girls' basketball team. You had the Mortensen girls were involved, and the team was incredibly successful in football. And for boys' football and boys' basketball, you had Marcus Bidlack and Corey Braden. You had Robbie Schroeder. So we had a lot of state playoff appearances in those years that I was able to call the games. I originally started calling the games at the PA announcer at the old football stadium, and then Gary Brown asked me to do that, and I did. It was not the finest pieces of equipment, but I sure enjoyed getting to do it.
Now, at one time, were you calling the games and then also on the radio at the same time?
Yeah, I was the PA announcer and doing radio at the same time, which is apparently something that not many people have ever tried. I didn't realize it was hard until somebody else that was in the business goes, "How do you do that?"
Would you do that?
Well, you don't push. You know, you talk on the mic, and then you blend in what you see, and then you let off the mic sometimes, and then finish what's going on.
Yeah, that sounds complicated.
Yeah,
but
it seemed to work. But yeah,
what was it like back then?
Oh, well, the athletes in the games were amazing, but there was no I didn't have any headphones.
Yeah.
If I had a home game, I would bring a transistor radio with me, and then I'd put an earbud. It was like the old school, so I could listen to the radio station, and then when I would send it back to the station for a 60-second break, I would send it back, but I could tell. If I'm on the road and you can't get WJBM, which is pretty much every place other than here in Calhoun, I had to count because I couldn't get the radio, and I didn't have a feedback to me from the little equipment that I had.
Nothing was easy back then.
I would send it back to the station. It was either a 30 or a 60-second break, and then I'd just sit there and count 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi, 3 Mississippi, and then I just jumped back in.
I'll be darned.
And it seemed to work. So yeah, it was entertaining and challenging, but I really enjoyed it. And the pay was amazing. I got like $25 a game.
Oh yeah,
right. Yeah. which sometimes paid my gas, sometimes didn't.
Now of the games, we were talking a little bit before we came on the air, and you mentioned Geneseo.
Yeah.
And that year it was in the 90s, I believe.
Yeah, it was the year before. I think we were undefeated. That was, I think, Corey Braden and Marcus Bidlack senior year. Very, you know, they were 9-0, and I think we went to Washington and got beat in the first rounds. And the next year, it's Robbie Schroeder, I believe, is the quarterback. I think the Long Boys were wide receivers. Not as good of a team during the regular season. They were 6-3, but they got on a nice little run in the playoffs and got to the either quarter or semifinals and played in Geneseo. And Geneseo is a powerhouse in west, north central Illinois. And I can remember looking up some information on them and preparing for the game that they had as many state playoff championships as we had state playoff appearances. And so we go up to Geneseo, and their town looks very similar to the downtown of Jerseyville at that era.
Uh-huh.
And but when you got to the game, they had the Green Bay Packer uniform colors and style, and they had at least 100 kids on the sideline, and they just killed us. It was, not a great game to watch. Impressed by their abilities, but yeah, not a great culmination of a very good season.
Now, you know, those years, you know, it seemed like we did dominate in football, and maybe basketball too. I don't know.
They had good runs in basketball. Ed Test came to town, and that changed everything for football.
Now Test, when did he come to town? About in the 90s, early 90s?
Jamie Gorman era, the Norman brothers, that was maybe, mm-hmm. Jamie's 58. I'm not sure doing the math what that would be, but he made a big difference, obviously, as much like John's did over in Calhoun.
Right, he had a lot of good runs, and he was a cool guy. I liked him. You know, he was very straightforward. Yep. Kind of tough dude.
Got to the point.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's what I hear most about Ed Test as well, that he got to the point pretty quickly.
Yeah. But back to being an attorney, you're operating here in town, and Were you state's attorney as well?
I never was state's attorney. I just worked for Lee.
So you had, and you're thinking, you know, at one point in time, going to run for judge.
Yeah.
And you did.
I ran in 1990 against Tom Russell and got beat.
Yeah.
Tom was the associate judge here. And then he finished out his term, and then he was going to retire midterm. So I got initially appointed by the Supreme Court and then ran and won, actually ran unopposed and won the election. So.
And were judge for how many years?
15 years.
Yeah.
Retired in 2020.
Hey, if you're just joining us, I have with me retired judge Eric Pistorius, talking a few different football and operating as an attorney and a judge here in Jersey County. So as you were judge 15 years, did you ever have any big cases?
Well, there, I mean, to the people that are involved, case is a big case.
Okay.
And I tried to treat every case in that manner so that people understood that I got comments made when I was done, and people said, I always appreciated that you always listened.
Mm-hmm.
And I always thought that was important. And listening is a learned talent, particularly for attorneys who like to talk, and I'm as bad as any of them.
Yeah.
But in that role, I tried to parse through it all and make sure everybody got their chance to say their piece. And then once they're done, and I'm going to make that decision. So every case was important to me because it was important to the people. But probably the most highest profile is the Carroll, the murder trial
Before we talk about that case, what do you think is attorneys, young attorneys that are going in front of a judge, all right, what are some things that they need to do and some things that they should not do if you're coming for a judge? You're young and you're starting off. What do you think? What's your tips?
I was very, very simple, and I didn't have a dress code. You go wherever you wanted, as an attorney. I mean, a lot of judges want ties and whatever. I didn't care. I want two things. I want you to be on time, and I want you to be prepared.
Okay.
And that's it. If you do those two things, life is going to be very successful for you in every aspect of life.
How often did that happen?
It didn't early.
Yeah.
But because there was a couple of people that didn't understand how important that was to me. And when I explained the importance...
How do you reprimand somebody for coming in late? What do you usually do?
It depends. It depends on their demeanor when they get there. Are they apologetic? They're going to give me a reason why. I had one attorney walk in a half hour late, and the problem with this guy showing up a half hour late is it wasn't just him. It wasn't inconveniencing me. My docket rolls along. I do the cases as people bring them to me. But there were three other out-of-town attorneys. This guy was an out-of-town attorney, mm-hmm. that were all waiting on him, and they had other places to be.
Yeah.
That wasn't their only destination of the day. And so he wandered in, without any appearance of being hurried or apologetic. Had he done any of that, I would have brought him up front and just gave him a quiet little, you can't do this.
Uh-huh.
But he came in with the wrong attitude, and so I dressed him down in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And I made it loud and clear. And he started to backtalk. Said, no, you don't talk to me. Talk to those three people because they're the ones waiting on you. And you're the one that has messed up their day.
Yes.
And that is discourteous. And I'm unaccepting of that in my courtroom.
Yeah. I like it when people show up on time, for sure. Yeah. Because everybody's time is money.
Yeah.
We got time. We only got so much time.
And my time's just as valuable as yours, is what my rule was.
Yes.
So, yeah.
Now, let's go to the judge, to the Carroll case. So you were the judge on the Carroll case.
So, took place. It was something that happened.
How many years 15 ago?
15 years ago is when it took place. And it was his son had a girlfriend, and there was some suggestion that maybe mom was not the greatest mom ever. And so... as the facts come out, that he and his family take off on a little boating excursion or camp or a camper or whatever it was. And then he and his son came back to town, and according to the evidence presented, Mr. David, is it David?
Roger.
Roger Carroll. Roger Carroll. Roger, David was a teacher, so yeah, I don't want to defame yeah, him. He was right. a good teacher, actually. But Roger Carroll, I guess Roger Carroll Jr., I think, wasn't it? This gal, the mother, suggesting that her daughter was at his house and that he shot her and then burned the body for 3 days.
Yeah.
And so nothing happened. They always considered him a suspect, but they couldn't get anything about it. So then fast forward 10 years later, and there's a family dispute between him and his wife, and there's allegations of a domestic battery. And when that happened, the son, who was 15 at the time, is now a grown man, and he goes to the police and tells them what really happened.
Mm.
And so that turned into a week-long or more jury trial.
Even turned into a movie, didn't it? Or something. I mean,
You got the Frank Yocum one. That's the Paula Sims one that was a movie. But I don't know if Carol turned into.
I don't know if it was kind of like a documentary.
Okay,
it was pretty interesting. I saw bits of it. Now I got a question for you. Okay. How's the new judge, Allison Lorton? How's she doing?
That Lorton girl?
That Lorton girl.
Oh, my gosh.
How's she doing, in your estimation?
As I expected, she is sharp as a whip. She has absolute control in her courtroom. She shows respect. She listens. She does she checks all the boxes. And I knew this from the first time that I met her, when she first came to town, obviously. With Leif, and she worked for Cliff Emmons, who was an attorney in Jersey County for a lot of years, moved to Madison County. And I like telling the story in front of Cliff also, is that he showed up at a hearing and made a really nice, had a nice written brief, made a great argument on a case. And so I ruled in his favor. And so the other attorney had left, and Cliff was putting his papers together. And I knew that Allison worked for him. I was working for him at that time. And I said, hey, Cliff, go please tell Allison what a wonderful job she did on that brief. And he goes, well, Judge, why do you think that Allison did that? Because I've seen her work and I've seen your work. And he kind of put his head down. He goes, I'll tell her.
Yes.
So, and I knew then, I said, this is somebody that's going to be very good at what she does. And when she appeared in court as an attorney, always very professional, again, always on time, always prepared. And she brings that to the bench. And I get a chance to show up in front of her now, cause I'm doing a little part-time public defender gig, and I enjoy that immensely. Yeah. Scott Schultz came to me a year and a half ago and said, I don't know what you're doing or if you like what you're doing, but I sure need some help as a little part-time public defender gig. And I go, I'll do it. He goes, really? I said, yeah. I said, I love the best part about the practice of law is being in court. That's the fun part of it. All the background stuff, all the work stuff, not as much fun. But
okay,
yeah, being in front of a judge, making an argument, that's fun. Being in front of a jury.
A lot of people, they say, the scariest thing is for people to talk in front of a crowd. But so you have to be able to want to speak.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I was one of eight, and if you wanted to be heard, you had to be loud.
Where were you in that?
I was six out of eight. So there was three boys, and then my two older sisters, my two younger sisters, and then when my father passed and my brothers all left, it was me.
Kind of like the Shell family.
Yeah, me, five women, and one bathroom. So one thing I learned is to get up early.
That's right.
To get my shower and get the heck out of this mess, but yeah. I was very fortunate and had a very strong mom, kind of like Aggie Shell, who raised a bunch of kids all by herself.
Yeah.
Yep.
For sure.
Mom was the same kind of person. She was a little scarier than Aggie, though, I think. But I just knew Aggie as somebody else's mom, not my mom. I'm sure she had her moments as well.
So this new job that you have, is it interesting?
Every single day. It's always different. Yeah. It's a one day a week kind of a gig. Criminal dockets usually on Mondays. Every once in a while you get pulled in on a Wednesday or a Thursday. It's, I'm semi-retired, so I got time. The only thing I got to worry about is getting my honeysuckle cut back. So
your honeysuckle?
Oh, yeah. We got a nice crop. And that's not a good thing, as
No.
But it is honeysuckle cutting season right now, so I'm about ready to get at it.
Oh, shoot.
Got my chainsaw on a stick.
Yeah.
And some Tordon. So I'm ready to cut it and spray it.
What else are you doing in your semi-retired life?
We play a little golf.
Yeah.
Married Kathy Sinclair. We have a wonderful time together. We got a couple of cats. One of them's getting fixed as we speak.
And fixed up.
You shared with me that it's going to be a little more expensive than I expected. Well, so thanks.
Yeah. Just from experience. But yeah. Needs to be done.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's no question about that. This one's full of, can I say piss and vinegar?
You said it.
Yeah. That's what he is right now. He needs to, something needs to calm him down. So, yeah.
Okay.
We'll see.
Well, Eric, it's been a joy having you in. Anything that you'd like to touch on before we close this interview out?
No, it's just very lucky. I mean, I grew up in a cool little town, great people.
Yeah.
Got to come back and hopefully make a difference.
You seem very happy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Couldn't be in a better place in my life right now than where I'm at.
It's too bad this doesn't happen earlier in our lives, right?
Well, that's part of life. You got to get through it sometimes.
Yes. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
And have a great day.
All right. See you. Thanks.